Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. It's time to join the conversation at americascannabisconversation.com. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News Update. I'm Dan Perkins. Washington, D.C., Congressman Chairwoman says stop kicking young people out of jobs training programs for marijuana use. As Congress prepares legislation to reauthorize Jobs Corps, the nation's largest residential career training program for youth and young adults, their chairwoman of a key House panel is urging colleagues to consider eliminating a drug screening requirement that each year prevents thousands of young people from participating, overwhelmingly for cannabis. Jobs Corps enjoys widespread bipartisan support, and I hope we can find bipartisan agreement to make it even more effective, said Representative Frederica Wilson, Democrat of Florida, who chairs the House Higher Education and Workforce Investment Subcommittee, she said during a hearing this past week. She said, quote, "This includes changing the counterproductive zero-tolerance language enacted by the Clinton administration, which requires automatic dismissal of young people for alcohol abuse, minor drug offenses, and other infractions." The Congresswoman said blanket drug testing, with follow-up tests being required even before the chemicals may have fully left the student's body, had led to roughly 12,500 expulsions, 91% of which were marijuana use. Today, recreational marijuana is either legal or has been decriminalized in nearly half of our states. Rather than dismissal from the program, evidence of drug abuse should be instead met with a reasonable and helpful intervention, like counseling or treat. The House committee discussions last Thursday was the first of three planned hearings to discuss reauthorizing the Workplace Innovation and Opportunity Act, which comprises jobs and other career preparation programs. Still in the nation's capital, Senate bill would allow CBD-infused foods, drinks, and dietary supplements. Hemp was legalized under the 2018 Farm Bill, but the Food and Drug Administration has still not finalized processes to allow derivatives such as CBD to be used in consumable products like foods, drinks, and dietary supplements. A new Senate bill introduced on Wednesday seeks to change that. The Hemp Access and Consumer Safety Act, filed by Senators Ron Wyden of Oregon, Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Jeffrey Merkel of Oregon, would exempt hemp and hemp-derived cannabinoid or a substance containing any other ingredient derived from hemp from certain restrictions that have blocked the emergence of legal consumable hemp products while the FDA has slow-walked regulations. The bill would also say federal officials may establish labeling and packaging requirements for hemp-derived products. CBD products are legally being used and produced across the nation. Yet because the FDA has failed to update its regulations, consumers and producers remain in regulatory gray zone. Wyden said it's been more than 2 years since I worked with colleagues to have Congress legalize hemp and hemp-derived products. It's long past time for the FDA to get with the program for sake of American consumers and farmers. Senator Paul said hemp-derived CBD products and businesses have earned their recognition in the marketplace, but the FDA, unfortunately, hasn't treated them like any other food additive or dietary supplements, adding that the new bill should provide huge relief for hemp farmers, processors, and merchants. Now our quick update of what's happening in the states. In New Hampshire, permitting qualifying patients and designated caregivers to cultivate cannabis for therapeutic use is being considered. In Maryland, the Senate is having hearings on possession of marijuana to define what is the criminal threshold. The Colorado Finance Committee is hearing testimony on change of the sales tax for retail sale of marijuana. And finally, back in Maryland again, the income tax subtraction modification of expenses of medical cannabis growers, processors, and dispensaries being discussed in a Senate hearing. This has been your America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News Update. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's joining the conversation today. First up is John Kager from New Frontier Data, and he's going to talk about the potential conflict and challenges of the pharmaceutical industry and the cannabis industry in treating many ailments. Next in the conversation is Mike Regan and Colin Farron, who have founded a new company called MJ Research, and they're going to talk about what they can do to help investors considering investing in cannabis. Next, our Lifestyles reporter Rich Wolkoff in a special report with Nancy Birnbaum, the publisher of Semi Magazine, a Northern California publisher. publication focused on health and wellness and pro-cannabis stance. And last is a visit with the first guest we had on this program almost 2 years ago, Justin Carpathian, who is an entrepreneur that owns several dispensaries in Sacramento, California. He's going to talk about what's happening in the evolution of product and branding. An important message. So let's get the conversation started. I'm Dan Perkins. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to the conversation, and joining us today is a gentleman who's been on our show several times, gets great ratings because he gives such great information, John Kaga from New Frontier Data. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Dan.
You've got a new report on cannabis and the pharmaceutical and the disruption that cannabis is going to cause. We want to talk about that, but let's just real quick tell people how they can get a copy of that report.
You can visit newfrontierdata.com/analyst-reports. That's newfrontierdata.com/analyst-reports.
Super. What's interesting about the report is Giada, who is the founder of the company, writes kind of an overview. And she said when they started the company, was it 2014? She said, we're not going to talk about pharmaceuticals. And here we are talking about pharmaceuticals. In this report, you talk about the expansion of the legalization on a state basis for both medical and recreational marijuana, what that means to consumers. And at the same time, you also are alluding to what would happen if we get federal decriminalization and the doors get blown wide open. So tell us a little bit about the report, John.
Right. This latest report, in which we have produced in partnership with Skylight Health, looks specifically at the medical cannabis consumer and both tries to understand how the medical cannabis consumer is using cannabis to treat or alleviate different types of medical conditions. But it also explores the role that medical cannabis is playing in terms of cannibalization or substitution with pharmaceutical products. So really trying to understand which types of medications are medical cannabis patients most likely to substitute with medical cannabis, and how effective have those substitutions been in managing the conditions for the patients.
You cover a lot of different diseases. I want to guess 10 to 12, all of them widespread. After I read the report, I was kind of left with a question. And you talk about the various prescription drugs that are used to treat certain illnesses or whatever. And I'm curious if you have any data. And I realize that the cannabis business in the United States is highly fractured. It's state only. Mm-hmm. But how does the price of treating that illness with cannabis care compare to the prescription drugs?
We didn't look at the pricing issues specifically within this report. However, it is something that we have looked at in previous reports, including a medical cannabis focus report that we did in 2018. And there's a lot of research that shows a fairly substantial cost savings in markets where medical cannabis is legal relative to the markets where it is not. So, for example, there was a study done by two PhD researchers, Bradford and Bradford, which found that, I believe it's between 2014 and 2016, the states in which medical cannabis was legal saw 11% reduction in the overall Medicaid spending relative to on conditions for which cannabis is commonly treated. And here we're thinking pain, anxiety, and related conditions. But they saw an 11% reduction in their patient spending on Medicaid. And so when we extrapolate that 11% saving within medical states to what it could represent on a national basis, you know, we're looking at potentially up to $4 billion a year in savings just for medical cannabis legalization and its use in the states if it were made legal nationally. So the bottom line implications are considerable, and cost, particularly for the more expensive opioids, the cost comparison between cannabis and some of these treatments is a critical consideration for a lot of patients who are looking for therapeutic alternatives.
As I said a moment ago, we're talking about a business that's highly fractured, one state at a time. If we were to go to a national decriminalization so that we could ship product across borders and businesses could market and sell products across borders, do you think there's a possibility that there could be further reductions in the price of cannabis?
Oh, absolutely. So there's two dynamics that are influencing the price trajectory of cannabis. One is commercialization and the rise of scale. So using a crude analogy, if you think about, back to the early days of Colorado's adult use market, there were a lot of growers who were rushing to downtown Denver and buying warehouses or renting warehouses that were 5, 10, maybe 15,000 square feet and developing the operations there. Over the years, we've seen kind of the advent of growers moving into larger and larger facilities, producing in larger and larger scale. And now to the point where, you've got Canadian companies bragging that the cultivation facilities are large enough to be seen from space. Mm-hmm. So as you build those sorts of economies of scale, then it does create a very acute downward price pressure. There's a parallel dynamic that's happening, and this is going to temper how quickly prices fall, and that's the role of marketing and branding in creating kind of added value in this space. So as you've seen marketing and branding become more refined, as you see greater product differentiation, that's helped stabilize prices more so than if this were a fully commoditized market and there was no or very little brand differentiation in the space. But your point, I think, is correct in that even in an environment where brands and the marketing has become increasingly sophisticated, just the sheer volume of legal production that's happening currently and will continue to happen as more markets expand means that over time, we fully expect to continue to see prices come down and increased options for consumers.
John, I've been talking to Giada and Gary, and I've been saying to them for some time that I believe that if we get decriminalization at the federal level, we're going to see another wave of people who are not currently in the business of selling cannabis products want to get into it. And the players are going to change. You'll still see mom and pops, but you're going to see players who are not in the business today will get in the business with decriminalization. And so we're going to see competition. My question is, since your report deals with pharmaceutical companies, will the pharmaceutical companies get involved in the cannabis business?
We absolutely think that the pharmaceutical industry is going to be very active in cannabis. And I think we've seen the first indication of the ways this might manifest. Just a few weeks ago, you had the announcement that Jazz Pharmaceuticals was going to acquire GW Pharmaceuticals, GW Pharma being the largest pharma-exclusively focused cannabis company in the world, in a deal valued at $7 billion. That acquisition is the single largest acquisition in cannabis industry history. And reflective of the sort of seismic impact that these large consumer packaged goods companies, the pharma industry, can have as they start making moves in the space. One of the things about the way the pharma industry's participation in cannabis is going to evolve is I actually don't think we're going to see a big rush yet toward true pharmaceuticalization of cannabis. So in terms of going through clinical trials, going through FDA approval process, I actually don't think we're going to see a lot of companies rush in that direction yet because of how long it takes relative to the real available market opportunity right now. So If it's going to take 10 to 15 years to develop a pharmaceuticalized cannabis product while you've got lines out of the door at a cannabis dispensary, at a medical cannabis dispensary right now, does that 15-year investment make a lot of sense? Mm-hmm. So what I think we're going to see is less of a push toward pharmaceuticalization and more of these companies playing in the nutraceutical and wellness space. Mm-hmm. But there's going to need to be kind of changes to national regulations before they're comfortable doing that.
So are you saying, and I'm not, well, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, I just want to make sure I understood what you're saying. Are you saying that the one way for the pharmaceutical companies to get into the cannabis space without going through all the clinical trials and all that stuff is to acquire dispensaries or acquire manufacturing capability?
That's right. We think it's going to be about either acquiring manufacturing capability or some other type of technical expertise focused on production, processing, and kind of product development in this space. But the clinical trial process, I think, it's not going to make a lot of economic sense for a lot of these players to do exclusively, though they may do it in parallel. So, for example, they may start pursuing things like, once national laws change, start pursuing companies in the CBD space, in the non-ingestible, so topicals, lotions, cosmetics, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We can see them participating in that space, even as they start kind of the development and innovation around that 15-year or 10-year roadmap toward a pharmaceutical product. But we would be quite surprised if there are companies which intend only to deal with the pharmaceutical forms of cannabis at this stage in the market, since so much of the growth is going to be in the more conventional medical cannabis environment that we currently have in place, the dispensary model.
We've been talking to John Kaga of New Frontier Data. John, tell us how we can follow you and how our listeners can get a copy of this new free report.
Please visit newfrontierdata.com/analyst-reports. That's newfrontierdata.com/analyst-report.
Thank you for joining us today. It's always been a pleasure, John.
It's my pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back after these messages.
Every week on the W420 Radio Network, America's Cannabis Conversation brings you information and insight into the exciting and ever-changing world of cannabis. Hear from our host, Dan Perkins, as he highlights the week's news, checks in with Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, and discusses medical benefits during our Cannabis Doctor On Call feature. America's talking about America's Cannabis Conversation. Check out the archive of past shows at americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us are Mike Regan and Colin Farian, who have a new service that they want to talk to us about for people who are interested in investing in cannabis. So, gentlemen, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you, Dan. It's always really good to chat with you.
Thank you. So, Mike, let's start a conversation. What is the service that you have, and why do you think, Colin, why do you think people might be interested in it?
Thanks, Dan. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we just launched the premium services of MJ Research Co., and our aim is to provide professional-grade investment analysis of the legal cannabis industry. And I think our key differentiator is it's for investors by investors. So we basically charge a flat upfront fee in exchange for research that is free of conflicts of interest. There's no pay to play. There's no banking deals or trading desk behind us. There's no advertising, so we focus on the signal over the noise, if you will.
That's Mike, as a registered investment advisor for almost 50 years, that's important from my standpoint because I look at how so many of these cannabis stocks got whipped around. They went up to unreasonable prices, and then a lot of them have collapsed down to pennies a share. And a lot of people have lost a lot of money because of the way these companies came to market and how they were pushed and promoted by brokers and other people. So an independent source is really quite important. Colin, who else do you think should be looking at your service?
Thanks, Dan. I think that on our premium, so given we've got two services, and on our premium research service, we generally have a target client of high net worth individuals, as well as institutions and family offices looking to invest in the cannabis space. Our value prop to those target users are, just as you mentioned, brief, concise, and detailed read-throughs on the true strategy in the investment strategies in the cannabis industry. Mm-hmm. And then on the bespoke analyst model, the target clients are both family offices and institutions, and we serve as a compelling ROI when compared with if a family office or institution wanted to invest in cannabis, they'd have to dedicate a full-time analyst to that initiative, and they are likely not going to be experts, whereas we come at a fraction of the cost, and we are full-time experts. So it's a positive trade-off in that sense.
Do you, in the premium service, do you follow particular companies, and do you make any recommendations on particular companies?
Yes, we do. We follow, it's a mix of both macro and micro, the specific companies. We do make recommendations, and then the recommendations come with very detailed financial models with scenario analysis, as well as catalysts for the stock so that investors can understand where they might see upside and downside opportunities going forward in the narrative.
Mike, Colin mentioned that you also have a free service. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, yeah, we've been providing some research for free while we were building up the the technical capability of the premium service, and we'll probably still have some some free commentary, and and Colin and I also are usually writing in other other publications, such as MJ Biz Daily, so that links to those articles are always there. But the media analysis, going forward will be exclusively to the premium subscribers, at least for a time. There's the possibility of always opening up something that was premium, and then to users after a while. Like I wrote a piece on Schwazze back in October that was for at the time free members only. Now that's public, so that's potential in the future, but by then, it'll be more background info and, arguably stale.
I just had an interview with one of the senior people that they don't make specific investment recommendations. They look at the entire cannabis industry and look for areas of the industry that they think might be undervalued, but they don't make specific stock recommendations. So is this a this premium service, is it a qualified investor-only service?
Well, I guess in terms of the recommendations, I guess to be clear, it's not, not investment advice. You have to use at your own risk. But what we provide is as Colin said, scenario analysis where, the stock specific research will have a downside base and a bull target under different scenarios, mm-hmm. sort of help you understand what the risk reward is, because it's sort of the philosophy, we'd rather be, approximately right than precisely wrong, and investing in general, it's best to think about it in a probabilistic sense of what probably is going to happen, what could happen, and sort of what's the worst case scenario at this point, if, what's the likely downside if these things happen. So that's more the way we're coming at it for the stocks that we're specifically writing about.
So the customer, you define some of the customers like family office, these are more sophisticated investors who may not know a lot about the cannabis business, but are looking to learn and educate themselves of what the opportunities might be and then how to capitalize on those opportunities. Is that a fair assessment?
That's exactly the idea of it. And also understand what, even if you're a private investor, you have to know, I think, what's going on in the public markets and what the public companies are trading at, because if you have a marginal dollar to invest, you always have the option of buying something in the public market with full liquidity and pretty good investment information transparency in terms of filings. So you always have to consider what those alternatives are versus, you know, a private investment where you typically are locked. You don't have as much liquidity. You're locking up your capital with that investment for a long time, and who knows? And the information can be all over the map.
Right. So are you dealing with primarily companies that are private or companies that are public?
Well, the investor recommendations will be on the public side, at least mostly to start, because that's where most of the information is. But we have been writing about private companies as well, to the extent that, you know, like Colin, you should probably discuss the Dutchy piece we just wrote.
The majority, vast majority of the articles are written on public companies, just as Mike mentioned, because we have access to filings and more publicly available information. But it doesn't mean that we also have and will continue to cover interesting private companies, because generally we found that it's valuable for investors. The private companies often have data disclosed all over the internet, and we've found a way to organize that and put them into reports where you can highlight. For example, we did a review on Dutchy, which is a software retail platform that recently raised $200 million at a valuation over $1 billion, and then acquired the top two other players in the software stack. And so we wrote about both those private companies as well as how that will affect the other three primary public players in Akerna, Helix, TCS, and Weedmaps.
If we can just follow that for just a second, Colin, I believe this, that if we get federal deregulation and decriminalization of cannabis, there are going to be companies, and sometimes companies, public companies of significant size, big companies, that I think will take a real hard look at this cannabis space as a way to diversify their business in a business that has the potential to have significant growth for a number of years going out. So are you talking right now to these bigger companies that are not directly in the space, or are you waiting for the regulatory environment to change?
I'd say it's closer to us watching those bigger companies. We've had more luck with the corporate development teams within the multi-state operators at the moment, but we are carefully watching, and I believe we talked about this on the last show, but, you know, look at areas like packaging companies, like Ball, for example, where you'll see, you know, if the business is consistently growing at a low to mid-single digit rate on an annual basis, they could use cannabis to boost that by, say, 300 to 500 basis points, which represents a ton of value for them. So we have our own list internally, and we'll be writing to our member base about some of the more subtle players that we expect to get into the business from various industries. But we're not working on behalf, or we haven't had a rush of subscribers from those companies yet.
Mm. I noticed that in a recent interview, the chairman of Uber, when asked about if there's decriminalization of cannabis, would you get into the delivery business? He said, absolutely. One of the things that I saw happen during the pandemic with the restrictions of being able to stay open, and how the delivery businesses just seemed to explode in those states where they were allowed to do it. And I think it's like everything else. We adjusted our lifestyle to not going out and not going necessarily to stores, using the web and delivery services to get product to us. I can't help but not ask you a question. I know you can't say anything specifically because it's until the law passes, it would be pure speculation. But I would think that the one company that I look at that could have the biggest impact on this business of once you have the ability to distribute product across the states, got to be Amazon. They've already got a pharmacy operation. They don't say much about it, but they have it. We're going to be able to deliver cannabis products, I think, by Amazon and other providers, which is going to rapidly expand the business once we get past the decriminalization. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think you bring up a broader point, and this is sort of the reason why Colin and I have, you know, have started this business, is that this is not looking for sort of a, you know, short-term trade or, oh, legalization passes and then all the stocks go up and then you go home and move on. We view this as a multi-decade investable theme that's going to touch many, many, many industries, both traditional and new.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it's sort of early to speculate in terms of you don't know what the laws are going to be. I think the only thing that our investment thesis is that the genie is out of the bottle. The path towards more legalization from prohibition, that's pretty clear. And then the devil will be in the details in terms of how exactly that legalization comes about or how exactly those laws change.
Right,
and that's, you know, that's why we're setting this up, is basically to see, you know, when that actual law language comes out, does it allow interstate commerce? Does it allow the postal system to deliver this? Does it, or is it going to be, you know, more like other substances where it's only through certain distributors? We mm-hmm. don't know at this point. We know that
right.
it's going to move down that path, and then, like you said, the investment implications are far beyond just, you know, do you buy Canopy or GTI today? It's longer term. It's exactly, how does this affect Amazon? How does it affect Uber? How does it affect Pfizer and Budweiser and Starbucks?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we view it, it's basically, you know, a current market that's, what, 50 to 70 billion of illicit, and adjacent markets of 400 billion in the U.S. alone
mm-hmm.
that could be disrupted. So, you know, that's sort of the investable TAM, where you have an entire supply chain from, you know, agriculture to industrial to processing to distribution to retail that will need to be built. And how that looks is going to, I think, be pretty fluid and provide lots of both long and short investment opportunities over the next 20 years.
Mike, why don't you tell the audience how people can reach you and Colin, and what is the website?
You can find our research at mjresearchco.com. So mjresearchco.com.
Super. Thank you. You've been listening to Mike Regan and Colin Farron from mjresearch.co, and they are a proprietary research organization specifically on the cannabis industry. We'll be right back.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com. Time now for the lowdown on another high time experience. Here's 420 lifestyle correspondent Rich Walkoff.
Hey, if you want to be dialed into the ever-changing world of weed, you've got to do two things, my friends. You've got to first listen to America's Cannabis Conversation. You're already doing that. And you also have to read Scentsy Magazine, the cannabis lifestyle and culture magazine. And who better to talk to us about it than Nancy Birnbaum, the founding publisher and market director of Scentsy Magazine NorCal. Nancy, welcome to the W420 Radio Network. Great to have you on board.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be here.
Yeah, for sure. You just told me you guys are number one. Nobody has more viewers and readers than you guys do. So tell me, you're 5 years old. You've come a long way, baby.
It's true, we have. And some of that just really in the last, well, since the middle of COVID, I guess, the late last year, we really made a concerted effort to kind of switch up how we were doing things. We really put a lot of effort into increasing our reach and, you know, getting in front of more people. And it's worked really well because we've now overtaken all the other publications in the cannabis space, and we're the number one media magazine in cannabis. It's a great place to be, and we love how we're growing and expanding into so many different markets around the country. It's a good time.
And what is your demographic breakdown? I mean, a lot of people think it's that women are the untapped resource in the cannabis world. And how much are you seeing, you know, an ascent in that regard in female readers and the like?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked that. I think going into this year, we were seeing almost half and half between male and female readers, but we're seeing an uptick in female in just the women's presence in the industry overall. There's a lot of new articles that have just come out about how more women than men now agree that cannabis should be legalized federally, and more women are coming into the space as consumers, and certainly as the industry grows, we're seeing a lot more women in positions of the C-suite, entering the C-suite or starting companies. And that's something that I've been involved in since before Scentsy. Actually, Scentsy found me after I had created a group here in Sonoma County, kind of an offshoot of Women Grow, called Women's Cannabis Business Development, or Women's CBD. And that was just basically here to help support entrepreneurs, both men and women, in the industry. Yep. And I was doing a lot of great educational programs and some fun professional networking here. And it was just a great way to start building community.
And I see that in one of your articles that the reddest states are the hottest weed markets. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I guess because so many of the red states still haven't legalized, there's probably a lot of pent up demand. And unfortunately, that's driving the illegal market. And we find that in pretty much across the country, wherever it's not legalized, there's a lot of illicit, cannabis being sold and unfortunately not being regulated. And so therefore, who knows what you're getting, and, buyer beware, all of that. it's certainly tricky there to, in the states, primarily in the South, I think, where there's just so much resistance because of the stigma that goes along with it. And it's pretty much why Scentsy's here, is to help dispel that stigma and help educate people about the healing properties of the plant. We cover a lot of plant medicine, not just cannabis, and it's really about helping educate people.
Yeah, and tell me again about the derivation of the name. Because sensei, you think of sensimia, you may think of something else, but what is it? What's the essence of your title?
Yeah, it's fun. We delve into that for our anniversary April issue, celebrating our 5 years now. And sensei is short for sensimia, and it's also a term that's similar to sensei, that's the term that denotes the educator or the teacher. And that fits for who we are, as we're certainly honoring the plan as well as helping educate people.
I love the content. I was reading a number of your features. So tell me a little bit about some of the go-to, really strong attractions that you have in the Sensei magazine.
Attractions. Yeah, sure. We cover everything. It's really a lifestyle city magazine that's all about helping educate both the kind of curious, as well as folks in the industry. And so we really are broad in our scope of you know, interest and content. We have some great sections that people really enjoy, like the buzz. So in each market, it's the same layout, same format. And the buzz might cover all the things that are happening locally that you might find fun to do. We also have an events section that's going to have local or regional events and great things to do. We'll have product mentions in the buzz, so you'll find all kinds of new things to try, whether that's a great CBD brand or a new drink or edibles or anything else that you might find interesting, as well as non-cannabis. Of course, we're going to be covering anything lifestyle related. And then we have some great sections like the life, and that's going to have our features as well as, you know, national content. So there might be articles that are be of interest to everybody. And that could be anything from a spa-cation, like our March issue for NorCal had a, or yeah, our NorCal issue had a spa-cation with local great spas, some of them offering CBD treatments and some, you know, just great places to go for relaxation and, you know, close by in NorCal. So we really cover, you name it, we cover it. There's all kinds of information.
Yeah, and your sensibilities, what's that all about?
So we have one of the best editor-in-chief that you could imagine, Stephanie Wilson is our editor-in-chief, and the whole look and feel of the magazine is really due to her. She's got an incredible eye and loves to write about things that are happening, just, you know, that attract her attention. And so that's her column, is Sense and Sensibilities. And she's just basically given us her impressions of what's interesting this month. Always a fun read.
You know, in the day, maybe this magazine would be a bit sketchy or taboo or underground, sort of like the 12-year-old boy with a Playboy back in the day. But I think the basic acceptance has maybe elevated your profile or your readership. Just talk a little bit about the evolution of the cannabis industry and your magazine, Sensei Magazine.
Well, when we were started, 5 years ago, Ron Kolb, our CEO, just recently stepped back from CEO and just handed over the reins this week to our new CEO, Stephanie Graziano. But he came from many years in the magazine business, and because of a family illness that he had to deal with, he found that cannabis was really helpful in dealing with an issue in his family. And so he started getting involved in learning about the plant and decided that it was time for something like Sensi, which was really different from all the other magazines in the space at the time. And that could have been High Times or Dope or Culture or any of those magazines that were really, just had a different focus, let's say. And Sensi came, he put Sensi together with Stephanie and a bunch of other great people to provide something to the layperson, to somebody who might never really be in a place to go to a dispensary, even know what to get if they went to a dispensary to buy legal cannabis. And so he really wanted to reach those people and help dispel that stigma that has come, you know, with it for so many years. It's amazing how ingrained that is. It's not easy to educate people sometimes when they're stuck in their thinking right, because of whatever happened previously, just really tell people the wrong information about this. And so that's why
and breaking down old stereotypes. And I see some of your advertisers are really intriguing along the lines of the medicinal aspect of it, the medvetshq.com, the veterans helping, you know, soldiers coming home with PTSD, or the Canna Moms, the Florida medicinal pot advocates who are trying to help kids who might have pediatric cancer be able to use some kind of cannabis. So I think there's that, well, that societal element that is very noteworthy, as well as just the fun and recreational side to the cannabis world.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned those, because, you know, those are two good examples of how we incorporate and support organizations that are doing the right thing. And those were, you know, that space we gave to them so that we could help promote the work that they're doing, both MedVets and the Canamoms, because they're doing the things that are within our culture as well. And the Sensi culture is one of the reasons that I, you know, that I joined the company, because it just resonated with me. And it's such an important part of what we're doing. I was just going to pull up the pillars of the Sensi culture so that I could read them to you. But yeah, it's that kind of service to the community that we like to support. It's part of two aspects of our culture, the giving spirit and understanding heart.
Well, I love it. And maybe that's a big reason why three times you were voted the best publication in the industry by the Cannabis Business Award. So you're doing the right thing. You're growing. You're number one. You beat out High Times, which started way before you, goes back to my day.
That's right.
So more power to you. It's great catching up with Nancy Birnbaum. If people want to know, they want to read, they want to get the magazine in the print copy, how do we do that?
Well, since we couldn't deliver magazines when COVID hit, we kind of put the print on hold for a little bit. But we are going back to print pretty soon, I'm sure. It depends on the market and how COVID is doing, but in each market. But we're available digitally by going to sensimag.com. You can click on latest issue. If you want to see the magazine that I publish, it's sensimag.com/NorCal. And then you'll, of course, in each of our markets, like I said, we have hyperlocal content that everybody can enjoy. And so depending on what state you're in, you could pull up the issue that you'd like to read, or just go to sensimag.com and see all of them. We also have a new national publication that helps us kind of launch into, you know, the new markets that are coming up everywhere. And it's called Sensi Spark. We launched that with Oklahoma in January, and we're expanding that into Washington and Pennsylvania, Maryland and Florida. And Sensi Spark is one of the great things that we came into this year with to help us expand quicker.
Well, it's been a blast talking with you, Nancy, and I love reading about the happy travelers tours. You get
wine. Yeah, we just gave away a free tour with them for 420. Had a wonderful giveaway, a bed and breakfast, a contest that we did. And so lucky winner got two nights stay at the Flamingo Resort here in Santa Rosa, and also a tour with Happy Traveler Weed Tours.
You know, such fun stuff, the boozed and infused drinks. The high holiday menu as you infuse your foods, or the Herba Buena cannabis tours in the wine country. Just all kinds of cool things to learn about. Sensi, S-N-S-I, and Sensi Magazine. Nancy Birnbaum, the founding publisher and major market director for NorCal. Great catching up with you, Nancy. Best of luck and congrats on all the success.
Thanks, Rich. Good to talk to you.
Fun time. This is the W420 Radio Network. And if you want to hear this again or just grab a snippet of that, go to W420 Radio Network Archive. This is Rich Walkoff, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome back to the conversation. Joining us today is Justin Karapetian, who was on our very first show, and he's here to talk about what's happening in the industry with dealing with government regulation and the continuing influence of the black market on cannabis sales.
Justin Karapetian to talk about his industry that he loves with a passion as much as anybody I've ever talked to. In your previous visit with us, we talked about getting started in the business and the changes and what the business looks like going forward and the role of major players. But what I want to talk about in this first segment is, where's the product going? What's happening with product development? What are you thinking about? What are your customers telling you that they want?
Everything, Dan. Everything. In everything. I mean, look at it. In the normal chocolate industry, if you look at Hershey's, Snickers, Reese's Pieces, so on, over 2,800 to 3,500 brands of chocolate exist in the regular world. In the cannabis world, give or take 12. If you look at, for example, other products such as balms and rubs and oils and topicals, I mean, you're talking Mary Kay, various other brands, significantly thousands of different of brands of unique developed products. In cannabis, 12, 20 tops?
Just go into a CVS store and look at the women's cosmetics department, and it's aisles and aisles and aisles. It's just amazing.
Couldn't have said it any better. And that's exactly what the cannabis industry has to offer. This platform that is so open and so uniquely available for you to create something that is pertaining. And that's the uniqueness of this industry. The people that are right now producing products are people who are using it themselves, who have a passion, and who have developed something that they believe in. And they have the opportunity right now to create it in somewhat of a mass amount to share with other people within the industry and the new customer base that's developing. And that's across the board on anything you develop, whether it's joints, balms, tinctures, soap, you name it, the opportunity is there in the cannabis sector.
So let me play, if I can, for just a moment, ask a devil's advocate question.
Please.
I'm not saying that it's true. I'm just telling you it's my talking about this for months now that I've been involved in trying to figure out how to put this show together. One of the questions that I keep hearing from people is, there doesn't appear to be any standardization of product. And these are people who aren't users, but are saying anecdotally, you know, how do I know if this is supposed to have 28 grams, how do I know that there's a source there that says, okay, there's an oversight. Now, I understand that you are bringing best practices. How do we convince the public? How do you convince your customers and potential customers that if I say it's going to do this, it's going to have these components, that in fact it's true?
I have to give a shout out to the state, California, for creating some sort of methods that we have to go through now when we create a product. You are absolutely correct. Less than 12 months ago, literally less than 12 months ago, getting a proper dose, properly consistent product that you can truly believe that is the same effect every time you take it, that is the same dose every time you ingest it, was not really relevant more than 12 to 24 months ago. Fortunately, the laboratories are not very heavily regulated currently, so they're only able to tell you the amount of THC that you have and whether it has pesticides or mold. But unfortunately, the laboratories don't have any standards to test by, which comes back to a little bit about what you said. But if you have a good infrastructure and you have a good team, they definitely are able to take the test results and able to dose it properly, where you can at least measure the content or the amount of THC or CBD within a 2-3% range now. But also, I have to say this, Dan, everybody's body is different. And unfortunately, cannabis is still so new as it's being introduced to the marketplace. Everybody is a different digestive system, has a different tolerance level. So what you take, for example, is a 10 milligram candy, and I take the same 10 milligram candy, it can truly affect me in a way different manner than it's affecting you. And that's because of the way we digested it. That's if we had something to eat that day, or was it on an empty stomach? What's our body weight? These are all things that typically come into play when you are feeling the effects of what you're ingesting or what you're consuming. So definitely, I think that is another milestone that we have to achieve in the industry. So Unfortunately, I'd love to give that perfectional concept, but are we headed in the right direction? Absolutely, we are.
So what did the state added some element of testing that the dispensaries or growers or whoever mixers have to comply with?
Correct. Every time there's a maneuvering of a product, once the cultivator grew his product, before the product is able to hit a distributor, it has to go through testing on multiple levels. It's heavy metals testing, it's pesticide and mold and mildew, and then you have powdery mildew. Then there's also the THC content, CBD content, and these test results have to happen whether it's a flower, whether it's an oil, whether it's an end product, meaning once you've developed your cookies, you've developed your jar of cannabis, your joints, you have to put it back into testing and have that product tested so you can at least get a measured dose amount that at least fits what the label says. So there is some steps that the state has implemented as checks, measures, and balances before these products go out to try to at least get as closest to what is stated on the packaging of those products. So typically now when you buy a product on the shelf in California, you can believe there's about a 50 to 80% chance that they're very, very close to the package dosing amounts that they have put on those packaging. So it's a lot better than what it was 2 years ago.
And do you think, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm listening to what you just said there. Do you think if this were under the FDA, these products were under the FDA approval, would that make them more reliable? And the word that we didn't talk about, which is the word I kept thinking about, that the customers would trust you and your other companies that they're delivering what they say they're going to deliver?
I mean, I don't know what role that the FDA would play, that fundamentally the industry regulatory bodies have developed that's, you know, already kind of establishing themselves to play that role. There's been lots of stuff that the FDA's have approved, and 10 years down the line, they retracted that and said, no, we actually regret it. This product was giving you cancer. This product was causing heart problems. I mean, the consumer might believe in the FDA, but definitely I think that the industry has developed a certain key component of checks, measures, and balances to bring that sense of comfortability to consumers. At least currently what we're seeing in our customer base now when they're walking in, they're not buying on the streets. They're avoiding buying on the streets because they feel that there's a sense of trust because the product that is on the shelves now has been tested. And unfortunately, the guy that's selling in the back of a supermarket and the old, pot dealer days are starting to really be frowned upon by smart consumers, people who are willing to pay an extra $10, $20 and say, you know what? I want a safe product. I know this has been tested for mold and pesticides and mildew, and I'd rather just pay $20 more, $10 more, and know that I'm at least getting something that's safe. So there is that sense of comfort that's starting to evolve in the consumer base.
I read an interesting article this week, Justin, by a reporter who was interviewing what we will call legitimate distributors, complaining about what you're talking about, the quality and the dangerous nature of the product of the black market cannabis that's being sold, and really complaining that the city government in Los Angeles, they were specifically dealing with Los Angeles, is doing very little to shut down the illegals. They just let them go.
Yes, currently, if I understood, in the last week, there's been a tactful type of raid that is taken on by the Los Angeles area that is definitely starting to enforce these illegal pot shops that are popping up and creating havoc for the industry. But that's been one of the biggest problems, Dan, is now we're up against the black market again. Before you were dealing against the government or the local police or various organizations, government organizations, and now we're having to really be competing against the black market, which is selling product on the market, on the streets, that are now sprayed with pesticides and have mold and God knows what else, and they're not charging tax. They're giving a hell of a discount to the customer base, and their competitional verbiage is basically, it's the same thing that's sold in a store. So what's the difference? And it's half price off. Why would you buy it from a store? Just buy it from me on the street. But slowly the consumer is learning that the store's product is having to go through checks, measures, and balances before putting that product on the shelf. And I think that consumer awareness, as it starts to get out more, and we do a very big promotion on educating consumers about the value of buying from a legitimate track and trace type of a method that we're operating currently towards. And that is to understand the product that you're getting, the cultivator it came from, kind of a farm to fork method, but we call it farm to toke kind of a concept, and definitely understanding that this has been widely tested and it's a safe consumption product is starting to really be adopted by consumers.
Our guest today joining the conversation was Justin Carpathian, who owns a number of dispensaries in Sacramento, California, and one of the early founders of the legal cannabis industry in California. If you missed any of this great interview with Justin, you go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and listen to this interview and other interviews by Justin and other great guests.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety, or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to AmericasCannabisConversation.com and tune in for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.